Now we're holding on Mem Dalet Amud Bey's 8 lines from the bottom, last word. We started talking yesterday about the mitzvah of Eglah Arufa. The Torah tells us you find a dead body outside the city, you don't know who killed him, then you have first, they have to go first to Zekenecha B'Shoftecha, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara over here, your Zekenim and your Shoftim, have to go out and measure and find the closest city. Then the Zekenim, the base skin of that city, brings a calf. They decapitate it in a valley near there. And there are certain psukim that they say and that the Kohenim say to absolve them, they say to absolve themselves of responsibility. The Kohenim say, Kapil Amchei Yisrael, Hashem forgive your Jewish people, and that's the kapara for it, unless they ever find the person who did it, and then they bring him to Beis Din and get him executed or punished as appropriate. So we started talking about that yesterday. So now, continuing, the Mishnah had said, Rabbi Yehuda and Chamisha, so first you have to have members of the Beis Din HaGadol have to be the ones who go out and do the measuring to find the nearest city. So the Tanakhama of the Mishnah had said that you need 3. And Rabbi Yehuda says you need 5. So what's the reason for the opinions? So turn on Abban, V'yotzu Zekeinecha B'Shoftecha. The Pasuk says, your Zekeinim and your Shoftim should go out. So, then we learn, Zekenecha Shnayim, the word Zekenecha implies 2, because it's a plural, and then Miut Rabim Shnayim, the minimum plural is 2. V'Sheftecha Shnayim, the word Sheftecha also implies 2. V'Ein Beis Din Shokol, so that so far gives you 4, but you can't have a Beis Din be an even number, because then they could end up being deadlocked. Therefore, you add 1 more, Harikan Kamisha Divir Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says that's where you get 5. Reb Shimon says, and Reb Shimon is the Tanakhama of On Mishnah, or at least agrees with him. He says, Zekenecha Shnayim, just the word Zekenecha by itself means 2. He ignores the word V'Sheftecha, as we're going to explain in a second, that he does something else with it. The Ein Beis Din Shokol. So again, since you can't have an even number of Beis Din, Mosifin Alein Odech, and you add 1 more, Harekan Shlosha, and therefore you're up to 3. But, so according to him, you don't gouge him from V'Sheftecha another 2. Well, the question is, Reb Shimon Nami Hoksiv B'Sheftecha. Well, then what is Reb Shimon doing, according to him? The fact is, it does say B'Sheftecha. What is he learning from that? And the answer is, Ha'umi Bo'ilin Mi'chodin Sh'B'Sheftecha. He says that means it can't just be any Shoftim. It has to be the most special ones among them, meaning the ones from the Sanhedrin Dola. Rabbi Yehuda. So what is Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He says, Zikne Zekenecha Nafka. He learns that from the fact that the Posit could have said Zikne. This Gemara is also in Sanhedrin, because it deals over there at the beginning of Sanhedrin with the number of Dayanim that you need for various things. In Halacha, So one of them, it mentions over there is Eglah Arufa, and so the Gemara has basically the same discussion over there. So the Ran explains over there that Rabbi Yehuda is saying could have said Ziknei Sheftecha instead of Zkenecha B'Sheftecha. So therefore he learns from the word Ziknei. Now that's also why he doesn't learn from the fact that it could have said Sheftei and instead it said Sheftecha, because it couldn't have, the Ran says. There's no way, grammatically, it couldn't say Ziknei Sheftei. It wouldn't mean anything because Shoftei, Ziknei, means the elders of. So there has to be something for it to be tied to. The Shoftei also would be the same thing. So it could say Ziknei Shoftecha, but it couldn't say Ziknei Shoftei. Anyway, so he says, therefore, you can learn from the word Ziknei, and instead it says Zkenecha, that therefore, that you learn from that, that it has to be your special Zkenim. And then, since you have the plural Ziknei and the plural Shoftei, gives you 4. Reb Shimon, what is Reb Shimon answer to that? He says, still no good. If the Torah had written only, if the Torah had written Ziknei and not Zekenecha, Hava Amina for the Ziknei Ashuk, then you would think it could mean even Zekenim from the street. Now, we don't mean literally from the street, as in just any random old people. The word Zekenim in Chumash always means Chachamim. Almost always, but it means, in other words, they wouldn't necessarily have to be the most special ones from the Sanhedrin HaGadol, from the Lishkas HaGazis, says Reb Shimon. Therefore, Kasa Rahmana, Zekenecha, therefore, the Torah writes the word Zekenecha, the E Kasa Rahmana, Zekenecha, but still, if it only said Zekenecha without Shiftecha, Hava Amina, Afilu Sanhedrin Ketana, then you would think that it's enough, even if they're members of the small Sanhedrin of 23, where you had various Sanhedrins like that, besides that you had them all over Eretz Yisrael, you had a couple even in your Shalayim itself, and even in the Beis Mikdash itself. So Kasi Rahmanav Sheftecha, meaning Lemiuchadim Shabashaftecha, so it has to be the most special out of all of them, namely the ones from the Lishkas Hagozis. So in other words, Rav Shimon is saying you need both, because otherwise you would have thought it could be members of any Beis Din of 3, and you would have thought it could be members of any Beis Din of 23. No, but there's only one national Sanhedrin of 71, and the words Zekeinecha v'Sheftecha make that clear, but you can't therefore say that the words Zekeinecha and Sheftecha say each one two Dayanim, such that you should have four, and then add a fifth one. Well, Rav Yehuda, so the Gemara says, so what does Rav Yehuda say to all of that? He says, Gomar, you don't need the words Zekeinecha to show that it means the Sanhedrin Gdola. Gomar Zikne Zikne means Zikne Ha'ega. Instead, he can learn it by Xera Shava on the word Zikne from the fact that it says Zikne Ha'ega in connection with the Parhelam Dover Shal Tzibur. The Torah tells us in Parshas Vayikra that there are certain cases where the national Sanhedrin makes a mistake in Halacha, and most of the people end up following them. The details of it are in the Masech Dehorius, which we'll get to in a couple of years, Bez Hashem. And there it says that Ziknei Ha'eda lean their hands, they do smicha on the animal before it's shechted, and Malahalim Yuchadim Shaba'eda, so just like over there, it means the special ones, the ones from the national Sanhedrin, because they're the ones where they're the ones where they're psaked in on behalf of the whole Jewish people is what triggers the whole Parhelim Davar Shal Tzibur process. Afkan Yuchadim Shaba'eda. So the same way, here in that case, he's also learning for that it means Yuchadim Shaba'eda. So therefore, you don't need the word B'Sheftecha to teach us that. Therefore, you have B'Sheftecha available to teach you another two Dayanim. Well, the Gemara asked, E Gomer, well, if in fact he's learning that Zeta Shava, Ligmar Olakula Milsev Hasem, then why does he need to learn anything from Zakenecha or Sheftecha anyway? He should be able to learn everything from there, because in fact, when it comes to the Parhelim Davar Shal Tzibur, in that same Gemara and Sanhedrin, Rabbi Yehuda says, in fact, that he learns from the Psukim there in connection with the Parhelim Davar Shal Tzibur that five members of the Sanhedrin do the smicha on the animal. So therefore, so if he's learning the Zeta Shava from there, automatically he knows five for here for the measurement. So therefore, he doesn't need to douse in Zekeinecha and Sheftecha separately. Zekeinecha v'Sheftecha lamali. So then why does he need to say the words Zekeinecha v'Sheftecha altogether over here? It could just say Zikne, or however you would say, whatever you would put after Zikne to make it make grammatical sense. You learn the Zeta Shava, and that's that. You know, fine. So no, rather we have to answer Ella, no. In fact, Rabbi Yehuda is not learning it from the Zeta Shava after all. Rather, Vav v'Sheftecha l'minyana. He says the fact that it says Zekeinecha v'Sheftecha, the Vav teaches us that it means that the word Sheftecha adds another two. So the word Sheftecha itself he's using to say that you need members of the Sanhedrin Gdola like Rav Shimon. But the Vav, he's saying that it means in addition another two. Rav Shimon Vav like Mashmalei, whereas Rav Shimon doesn't hold that the Vav over here is meant to be marba anything. Now you have in other places where Rav Shimon, the Mefoshim point out, Tosfos HaRosh, among others, points out that there are other places where Rav Shimon himself does use a Vav to douche in things. What we mean, in this particular place, he doesn't find it to be compelling to say that the Vav is meant for a Drasha. Because he says, my common Rahman, I'm Yuchadin Shabashavtecha. So the Torah is just telling you, with the word B'Shavtecha, that it means the most special among your Shavtim. Okay, so therefore, so Rav Shimon says there's nothing extra to be learned, there's no extra people to be learned from the Vav. Sheftecha itself means the special Shoftim. Rabbi Yehuda agrees with that point that Sheftecha means the special Shoftim of the Beis Din HaGadol, but he held the Vav would add another two, and Rabbi Shimon disagrees with that. Okay. Now, the question is, Ela Me'ata, so if you're telling me that every time we have a plural in the Psukim, then we're using it to darshin more Dayanim, so Ela Me'ata, then by that logic, we should say also V'yotsu Shnayim, when the Pasuk continues, they should go out, maybe it implies another two edim, umodadu shnayim, and maybe the words and they measure should also include another two. So it'll be Rabbi Yehuda hare kan tisha, Rabbi Shimon hare kan shiva. So then if you follow the same logic according to Rabbi Yehuda, you'd wind up saying that you need nine dayanim, because you have four plurals in the pasuk that gives you eight, and then you add one more, so it's not even. And according to Rav Shimon, using the same logic, we're fine. He doesn't doubt in an extra two from B'Sheftecha, but he'd say you have two for Zekeinecha, two for V'yotsu, and two for Umadadu would be six, and then you'd add one more. And it's not so. So why not? Why are we not doubting extra people from, why are we not doubting extra people from those words? Meaning, in other words, basically, the Aruch HaNer in Sanhedrin explains that since we're saying that, as far as the Yotsu, since already we said this, the Kanim have to measure, then obviously they have to go out. But it could have been Mephoshim talk about, in other words, that it could have said whichever city is closest, then this Kanim of it bring the Egla Aruch. And obviously, if you don't know which city is the closest, then you're going to have to measure. So therefore, it didn't really need to say the words v'yotzu and umadadu at all, so shouldn't we assume that those are meant to teach us that there's more dayan? And the answer is no. Hahumi boile l'chaditanya. No, as a matter of fact, we need those to teach us what it says in a braisa, that there are rules. V'yotzu means hein v'lo shluchehen. The word v'yotzu means the dayanim of the Beis Din HaGadol themselves have to go out. They cannot send shluchim, even though usually we say shluchah shaladim kamoisai, but this is one of those examples where it's not so. Because the pasuk specifically says v'yotzu, and umadadu, and when it says they should measure, means we learn that there's a mitzvah to measure, sha'afila nimtza ba'alil la'ir, even if you find the body very close to the city, and it's very obvious that this is the closest city, nevertheless, ho'yumoyidin, they still measured, because it's a mitzvah to be involved with the measuring. Even if the measuring on the face of it is unnecessary, nevertheless, it's still a mitzvah to measure, and therefore the pasuk is stressing that by the word umadadu. The idea behind it we started talking about yesterday, various Rishonim explain, the Chinuch summarizes it, that they're making a whole to-do about this, the National Sanhedrin, as if members of the National Sanhedrin are coming out and measuring and so on and so forth, and then everybody's going to get curious about what's going on, and first of all, everybody's going to be very concerned about the fact that such a terrible thing happened among Jews, that a person was killed, but then also people will start wondering about it and checking into it, and eventually they may figure out the person himself who did it wrong may in fact go and admit it, or if not, then people may come and say Eidos in front of them, and that way we'll be able to find their Ritzeach and deal with him. So therefore there's the idea that there's a mitzvah to measure even where it's not necessary. And then there's a machlokes rishonim within that, a machlokes achronim rather, within that, do they have to actually still measure in every direction to every other city, or do they just need to measure to the nearest city? So we learn that from the words v'yotzu umadadu, therefore we don't have those words available to teach us extra dayanim. Rav Shamshon Afal Hirsch has a whole explanation of this whole thing. He says that the vort is that the individual Sanhedrins and the individual cities in Eretz Yisrael themselves are already shluchim of the National Sanhedrin. And they obviously fell down on the job in the fact that something like this happened in their area. Therefore, the National Sanhedrin themselves have to come out. They can't send shluchim. Because they have to demonstrate that, basically, they're in effect, it's a rebuke to the local based in, you didn't do your job, therefore we have to come and supervise you. And he goes on to explain various other details of the mitzvah in that vein. Anyway, the Gemara says, Masnistin deloik Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov. Now, apparently our Mishnah does not go like Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, who says, again, we have the Tanakhama saying that you need three Dayanim, and Rebbe Yehuda saying you need five. The Tanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, but on the other hand, neither of them are talking about anybody else other than the members of the Sanhedrin coming out. But Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that we learn the word Zekenecha and Sheftecha differently. Zekenecha zu Sanhedrin. The word Zekenecha, he says, refers to the Sanhedrin, and we're going to talk about in a second how many members of the Sanhedrin. And Sheftecha is a melech v'kohen gadol. And he says the word Sheftecha is not meant to teach us just Zekenim from the National Sanhedrin, like we said, or that it means to add another two dayanim, but rather it means that the king and the kohen gadol also have to come and be involved with the measure. And we see that they're called shoftim, melech tichtim, melech b'mishpat yamid aretz. The pasuk says the king upholds the world with justice, so we see that he's called a shoftim. Kohen gadol, tichtim, vosel kohenim alavim, vel ha-shofet ha-shiyir v'gomer. The pasuk says that you come to the kohenim, the levim, and to the shofet, which will be at that time. So now it's talking about coming to the Sanhedrin for a psak halacha, but still the fact that it phrases it that way, the Elah Shofet, after the Kohenim Levim, implies that it's somebody who's in charge of the Kohenim, namely the Kohen Gadol. So he says that those need to be there as well, whereas the Tanoim and our Mishnah didn't say any such thing. Well, Iboilahu. So now the question becomes, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Melech b'Kohen Gadol hu d'polig, is he arguing only about the fact that you need the king and the Kohen Gadol, Abba b'Sanhedrin, Ikir of Yehuda, Ikir of Shimon, Svirle, but as far as the number of members of the national Sanhedrin, he agrees with either of Yehuda that you only need five, or of Shimon you only need three. Adum of a Sanhedrin, Nami polig, Ad the Ikir Kula Sanhedrin. Maybe he's arguing about the Sanhedrin as well, and saying that only if the entire Sanhedrin is present, only then can we, so he would be arguing on Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in two things. Number one, they're saying the king and the Kohen Gadol don't have to be present, and he's saying they do. And number two, even Rabbi Yehuda would be saying you need only five members, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov maybe would be saying you need all 71 of them. So what is it? So Amar Rabbi Yosef Toshma. So Rabbi Yosef says, I'll bring you a proof from a braisa in Masechta the Sanhedrin. Now the subject of the braisa is the din of Zokin Mamre. The Torah tells us in Parashas Shoftim, right after that pasuk about Akorin Malavim, that if the national Sanhedrin makes a decision in Halacha, and then you have an individual Talmud Chacham, he himself is a distinguished Talmud Chacham, he's capable of deciding and paskening, but he goes against the Beis Din HaGadol and paskens differently from them, then he's Chayav Misa, he's called a Zokin Mamre, a rebellious elder. So now a Braisa deals with some of the details of that. The Braisa says, Motzen Zokin Mamre Abei Pagi. Suppose that the Zokin Mamre found the members of the Sanhedrin in Beit Pagi. So Beit Pagi literally means that the part of an animal's head which is encircled by the rings, by the straps that then you use to control it. Because of that, though, that came to be used of any area that's appended to something original. The same way as you have over here, you have the reins around the animal, and part of them are appended, so to speak, around the animal's head. So the same way, Beit Pagi came to be used of places that are appended to Yerushalayim. So this is an area within the walls of Yerushalayim, but it's not part of the, it's not an original part of the city. It was added in later on. But it's considered like Yerushalayim. It still has the dinim. So different Rishonim discuss whether in fact it has the full kedusha of Yerushalayim or not. But whatever the case, it's very close to the Beis Hamikdash. Nevertheless, if the Zokin Mamre finds them over there, and he asks them about a particular din, and later on, and they tell him the din is such and such, the himra alayhem, and later on he goes and disobeys them and goes and paskens differently. Yochel tehei hamra ose hamra. You would think that that's considered a disobedience of the kind that would make him a zokin mamre. No, tamud lami v'kamta v'alisa alamokim. Therefore, the pasuk says, in introducing that, it says you should get up and go up to the place melamacham mokim gurdim. That teaches us that the special place where the Sanhedrin is supposed to be in the Lishkas HaGozis, in the Beis Hamikdash, gurdim is what triggers it that now a person disobeys them, that he becomes a zokin mamre. So in short, in other words, here, even though they're in Beit Pagi, it's right outside the Beis Hamikdash. It's an area appended to Yerushalayim. Nevertheless, though, and the Pashtus, the same thing would be anywhere else in Yerushalayim. But anyway, the point is that he's still not considered a Zokin Mamre unless when they give him the Psak Din, they're sitting in their office in the Lishkas HaGozis. Thus far, the Braisa. So now Rabbi Yosef analyzes. The Nofuk Kama. We have to figure out how many of them went out? Elema de Nofuk Mekhtsasan. Do we mean that only some of them went out, and are in Beit Pagi when he asks them for the halacha? Well, of course he's not a Zokin Mamre. Dumahanach de Ika Gavoi Tavasei Svirlahu. Maybe the ones who remained inside in Lushka Sagozis agree with him. And fine. Even, of course, you know, you could have that a majority of them went out, but still, the Yad Ramah in Sanhedrin explains that you still need all of them together, because what's going on over here? Again, there's a question in Halacha that hasn't been resolved until now. They're going and they're asking the national Sanhedrin, and then they're paskening a certain way, and then we say if somebody disobeys them, then he's Chayav Misa. But you have to have that all of them are together when the question is asked, because otherwise, how do we know? Maybe it's true, fine. Achrid Abin Lahakis, they follow the majority. But maybe if they had all been sitting together over there, the minority would have convinced the majority of their way of thinking, and they would have passed in differently. So obviously, therefore, if any of them are missing, then from the Lishkas HaGozis, then you can't call them a Zokin Mamre for that. But still, the Aruch HaNer explains it a little differently, and he says the vort is that still you have to have, in any case, even if it turns out that all of them ended up disagreeing with him at different times, that's how it is, Gzeres HaKosev, you have to have all of them in the Lushkas HaGozis. So obviously, so again, we're saying that he met them in Beis Pagi and they told him the halacha, necessarily it has to be that all of them were there in Beis Pagi. It can't be that some of them were there and some of them were in the Lushkas HaGozis, because then there'd be no reason that he'd be a Zuck in Mamre anyhow. So obviously we have to be talking about that all of them went out. Well, Ulamai. Well, now we have to ask, well, why would all of them be outside of there? And we were talking about where all of them would be together. Because again, obviously we're talking about that all 71 of them are in one place. So we can't just be talking about, in other words, that it's already, the day is over and they went home, because then he's not going to find them all together. So are we talking about that they just left for optional reasons, they have other jobs or they have other things they need to do. Would they be even allowed to leave? There always has to be a quorum over there. There always has to be a minimum number during business hours, during the hours when the Sanhedrin is supposed to be open. There always have to be a minimum number of people over there. Because the pasuk says in Shir Hashirim, Shorerech Agan Hasahar, your navel is like a round bowl. Al Yechser HaMozeg, the Mozeg where the mixture of wine should never be lacking. So the round navel is refers to the Sanhedrin, because they sat, as the Gemara tells us in a few places, kachatzi gur nagula, they sat in a semicircle so all of them could see each other. So therefore, they're compared in the pasuk to the navel, because the same way Rashi explains on the pasuk, the same way as a baby gets all its nourishment through its navel, the same way we get all our nourishment of Torah through the Sanhedrin. And when it says al yechser hamozeg, the mixture should never be lacking. Now that means, in other words, when you mix wine, the usual proportion that they mixed wine was two parts water to one part wine. So we learn from that, she mitzrach echad man lotzis, if one of the members of the Sanhedrin, of the national Sanhedrin of 71 has to leave for any reason, im yesh shem esrim mishloisha, if there are 23 other members over there still going to be present, keneged Sanhedrin Tana, which is the equivalent of a Sanhedrin Tana, and they're going to still be there, yotze, then he's allowed to leave. 23 is about one third of 71. So therefore, as long as you have that one third left, then you can consider it's al yechser hamozeg. The minimum for mixture is still there, one third, and therefore, like the one third wine that you would have in the mixture, and therefore that's fine. The imlav any yotze, and if not, if there are going to be less than 23 there, then he wouldn't be allowed to leave. So we see that Ludvar Harashus, they can't just leave for any reason. There always has to be at least 23 there. Tosfos in Sanhedrin, by the way, brings a different way of learning the Darasha. The word mozeg is gematria 50. Mem zayin gimel equals 50. So it means there can never be 50 members of the Sanhedrin missing, but there can be, because if there are 50 missing out of 71, means there's only 21, but there can be 49 missing, because then you'll have 22, and fine, as we said before, you can never have an even number in Beis Din, so anyway, they're going to have to add a 23rd. So therefore, that would be fine. But anyway, the point is, we see that all the members of the Sanhedrin can't leave at once. Elop shitul advar mitzvah. So obviously, we have to be talking about that they're leaving for advar mitzvah. Lamai. Now we have to ask, what dvar mitzvah would demand all the 71 members of the Sanhedrin to be there? Lav lamedidas egla. Wouldn't it be to measure for the egla aruf for Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? In that case, then we would say this braisa goes according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and there would be our answer. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov does require that all 71 members of the Sanhedrin be there for the measuring. But, oh, that's Rabbi Yosef's proof. But, Omalei Abaya, but Abaya says that's not really a solid proof. Dilma la hoisif ala ir ala azoris. Because you could equally well say, maybe, that, that they went out for a different mitzvah, namely to expand the size of the city of Yerushalayim or to expand the size of the Azores. Because it's not, as in fact we learn in a Mishnah in Shavuos, in Sanhedrin rather, Ein Mosifin al, it's both actually, Ein Mosifin al Ir Val Azores, El Beveisim Shoshiv Ve'echad. You can only add, if they want to expand the size of the city of Yerushalayim, and that expanded area should have the dinim of Yerushalayim, as far as eating Karchim Kalim and the various other things, or they want to expand the size of the Azorah, and it should have the dinim of the Azorah, then you have a lot of things, among the other things you need, Elu B'Basin, Shoshim V'Echad. You need the Basin of 71, and that means all 71 of them have to be present. So therefore, you could say they left and they're in Beis Pagi because of that. Doesn't necessarily prove that this Braisa is talking about measuring for the Egla Arufa and following Rav Lazar ben Yaakov. Okay. Nevertheless, even though Abaya said that it's not a solid proof, Tanya Kava says that Rav Yosef, in fact, there exists another Braisa which says exactly like Rav Yosef's understanding. Where the Braisa says, Motzen HaBeis Pagi, that again, if the Zokin found the Sanhedrin in Beis Pagi, the Himra Alehen, and he heard what they say is the Alocha, and then he went and disobeyed them. Now, why would they be in Beis Pagi? The second Braisa spells out, to go into Yotzalim Didas Egla. For example, they went out to measure for the Egla Arufa, Ola Hosef Ala Irva Ala Azores, or they went, like Abaya says, to increase the size of your shalayim or the size of the azara, yochol tehei hamra osse hamra. You would think then that the zaken mamre's disobedience should be considered a disobedience that makes him a zaken mamre. No, tamad lamer v'kam tevalisa. Therefore, the pasuk says you should get up and go up. Malama chamokam gorim. From there, you learn that the actual place of the Beis Mikdash is what makes the difference. And if you didn't hear the psak from them in the lishkas agazis or wherever it is that they're supposed to be located, then he's not a zaken mamre. So therefore, that does bear out Rabbi Yosef's point that yes, this Braisa would be according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and therefore, yes, the answer is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would require all the members of the Sanhedrin to be there to measure for the Egla Arufa. Okay. The halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, the Rambam Paskin is like Rabbi Yehuda, that you need five. Next, the Mishnah had said, Nimsa Tomun Bagal, if you find the body buried in a pile of dirt, or hanging on a tree or whatever, then we said that the whole din of Egla Arufa doesn't apply. And the Mishnah had said, because the pasuk says, ki motzei chol ba'adama, if you find a dead body in the ground, and we're understanding the word in to mean on, meaning in other words, not buried in the ground. So the Gemara asks, Leima Masnissin, Rabbi Yehuda, V'lei Rabbanan. Well, does that mean that our Mishnah, therefore, necessarily would have to go like Rabbi Yehuda and can't go according to the Chachamim? And we would prefer not to do that, of course. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, the Pasuk says about the mitzvah, they have the mitzvah of shikha, that if you forget grain in your field, you have to leave it for the poor people, grain or any kind of crop, whatever. So the Pasuk says, v'shachachta oimer basada, the Pasuk says, if you forget a bundle of grain in your field, that means, when it says basada, it means prap la tomun divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that comes to exclude a case where the bundle of grain was hidden. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. B'chamem basada la rabba says ha-tomun. B'cham say on the contrary, the word basada comes to include that even if it was buried and because of that you didn't see it, nevertheless it's still considered shifra. So if our Mishnah is saying that ba'adama means only on the surface, that would be only according to Rabbi Yehuda. The answer is no. Amar Rav, afilo teimer rabbanan. So no, Rav says our Mishnah could go according to the Chachamim as well, because they would say, Chachamim yoni dekra, Chachamim yoni dekra. In each case, the beis, it's true, can have two meanings. The beis can mean in, meaning buried, or it can mean in as in just on the surface. You have to always be able to tell from context. So in our case, dichtiv, ki yimotzei cholo, the pasuk starts by saying when a body is found, and without saying anything else, you would say hecha de mishtaka. You would say that means any place you find it, it's still that still starts the egla arufa process. So then, the chachamim are going to say when it continues, ba adama, when it continues with the word which on the face of it was unnecessary to say in the ground, then that means prat l'tamun, then it means exclude from that the case where it's buried and stick to only the case where it's on the surface. We would understand then that the base of ba adama means on the surface of the ground. So therefore, that's why the chachamim say that over here so therefore our Mishnah would be saying, and even the chachamim would agree, that it means not when it's buried. On the other hand, look at the context of the pasuk over there. The pasuk says, when you're harvesting your grain in your field, when you're harvesting your harvest in the field, and you forget a sheaf of grain, so you would understand from that alone, first the pasuk is talking about your harvest, and then it talks about an oimer, which is a bundle of grain, so you'd understand that it means shikha dumya dekotzer. So automatically from that, without saying anything further, you would say that the shikha has to be similar to what you're harvesting. Ma kotzer begolui, when you're harvesting, obviously it's open, because you're not harvesting covered hidden grain. Af shikha begolui, then the word shikha would also mean only what's visible. And therefore, so the Kosev Rachmana Sikta, therefore, the Kosev Rachmana Basada, the Rabbis Zatom. And therefore, the Torah adds the word Basada, and the Chacham say, there you have to understand the Beis, meaning even inside, so even it's inside and hidden and buried inside the field, nevertheless, it would be included. Because, in other words, in each case, what we're doing is, look at how we would have understood the Pasuk without the word Ba'adama or Basada, and then you can figure out from that, say the Chachamim, what we're going to do with that word Ba'adama or Basada. In the case of the dead body by the Egla Arufa, without saying the word Ba'adama, automatically you would have figured that it means whether it's visible or whether it's buried in the ground. And therefore, Ba'adama tells us specifically when it's visible. And by Shikha, the other way around, by default, we would have assumed that it meant only when it's visible, and therefore the word Basada must be teaching us when it's hidden. So the question is, will Rabbi Yehuda Nami typically Mishit Kadrum Yudakotzer? Well, shouldn't Rabbi Yehuda also learn from that point that Shikha is said in connection with Kotzer, and therefore the same rule should apply to both, that Kotzer is visible, and therefore so is Shikha? So therefore, it shouldn't apply to what's buried. How do we know otherwise? Why does Rabbi Yehuda say otherwise? The answer to the Gemara says, "Eino chanami." You're right. Rabbi Yehuda would learn that way. So rather, what is Rabbi Yehuda doing with the word basada? He says you still need the word basada not to tell us that it means things that are buried like the Chachamim say. Rather, it includes also that you should realize also that shikha can apply even when it's still attached to the ground, even when it's just standing grain. Like this, you would understand without the word basada. You would understand if you harvested the grain, you cut it from the ground, and then you made a bundle of it, and then you forgot that bundle, then it's shikha. Or if you dropped a couple of individual stalks or whatever, how would we know? Let's say you have an entire section of your field that you forgot to harvest. How do we know that that's also considered shikha? That we would know from the word basada, says Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, I don't have the word basada to teach us about tamun. V'rabbanan shikhas kamam nalahu. Well, where do the Chachamim learn that din from? The answer is nafkalahu mikisiktsuk tzircha basadecha. They learn it from the fact that it says mikisiktsuk tzircha basadecha, and Hagoyis Habach also adds the words b'shachachta. So they learn because it says b'sadecha b'shachachta. In other words, if you look at the truff on the pasuk, the word b'sadecha has a separating truff. So it's one clause of the pasuk. Kisifta tzircha b'sadecha. Period. Not period. Comma. Whatever. B'shachachta oimer b'sade, and you forget a sheaf in the field. Nevertheless, the Chachamim are saying because it says b'sadecha and then b'shachachta, we can also darshan as though those two words go together. So it means even you forgot part of your field and didn't harvest it, then it's also considered shikha. So what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He says, he uses the fact that you could read the pasuk like that, the sadecha v'shachachta, he uses it to teach us what Rabbi Bohu says. The words v'sadecha v'shachachta teach us to exclude the case where his bundles of grain flew into the other guy's field. So a wind came and picked up bundles that were in his field and brought them into the next guy over his field, and he didn't realize that they were his, so he forgot them over there. So now the pasuk is telling you with the word besadecha, b'shachachta, that's not considered shikha because it's not because you forgot it, it's not in your field, you forgot it because you didn't realize it belonged to you. So Rabbi Yehuda is using the word besadecha b'shachachta to teach us that din. Therefore, he doesn't have it available to teach us the din of standing grain that you forgot it. It would be considered shikha. He has to learn it from the word besadecha, and therefore he doesn't have it available to learn about tamun. There's some discussion. What if he did know that it was his and he still left it over there? The Rambam says it doesn't matter. Either way, it would still be considered his. According to Rashi's Lashon over here, it's mashma only if Yitaka didn't realize that it was his, but if he knew that it was his and still left it there, then it would be considered shit. So whatever, there's discussion about that. Anyway, so, V'rabbanan, what are the Chachamim answer to that? They say, They say, because the pasuk could have said, in the field, and instead it says, besodecha, in your field. Therefore, we can douche in that din about if they flew into somebody else's property and you forgot it over there. So therefore, we can learn it from that, and therefore we don't need the sodecha, to teach us that. Therefore, we have it available to teach us. Therefore, we have the basada v'shachachta to teach us about shikas kama, and in turn, then therefore we have the word basada in that same pasuk to teach us about tamun, to teach us that tamun is included. Rabbi Yehuda, basada, again, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold that the word basada v'sadecha is significant, that we should daushin from it. Usually, yes, Rabbi Yehuda will douch in a line of chaf. We have the top of the Amud, where he douches Zikne versus Zikne-Necha, but here he doesn't find it to be compelling to say that the chaf of the Sadecha should teach us anything extra. Okay. So, since we're talking about that point, about bundles of grain flying into the other guy's field, so now the Gemara digresses a bit to talk about the dinim with that. And then eventually we're going to relate back this question actually to the Egla Arufa. So Boyramim, Sofu Omin Losot Sadehu Mahu. What happens if his bundles of grain that were blown around in his field, but they landed, instead of landing back on the ground, they landed on top of something else, on top of another bundle, or on top of a stone, or a pillar, or another bundle, whatever. Would the din of shikha still apply to them? Mahu, the question is, Rabbi Yemi is asking, Aver Sodek is Sodadami, are things that are in the airspace of the field considered that they're in the field, so therefore Shikha would apply to them, Olak is Sodadami, or maybe not, maybe the whole concept of Shikha applies only when it's actually on the ground. So Amulet of Kahana, Lit of Papi, Va'amulet of Kahana, Lit of Zid, Tifshit, Loimin, did Ababahu, Amulet of Elazar. Shouldn't you be able to answer Rabbi Yirmiyah's question based on what Rabbi Bohu said in the name of Rabbi Lazar, that we just said a few lines earlier, where he said that the Torah with the words besadecha v'shachachta, or with besade or besadecha, where it could have said besade, teaches us that where the grain flew into the other guy's field. Then it's not considered shikha, implying the chadera ein l'sech sedei olay, implying only if it flew into the other guy's field, not if it flew into his own field. So it sounds like if as long as it's in his own field, then it's still chayev and shikha, even though it's on top of something else. So the Gemara says back, why? V'litaneh, according to your svara that you're bringing up that idea. Why would you say that when it's in somebody else's field, he's potter only if it's floating? Literally, sofu means floating. So only if it's above the ground, only if it landed on something. Munochin loy, not if it landed on the ground. The fact is, Torah is saying the sadecha, it has to be in your field, and it's not because it's not in your field; it's in the other guy's field. So evidently, we have to understand Rabbi Bohu's case is talking about they fell into somebody else's field, and even munachin, even if they're lying flat on the ground, nevertheless they're not shikha. The only reason he uses the word sofu, which implies that they're somewhere above ground, is a little bit sofu, because how else is it going to get there in the first place unless it was picked up from the ground in his field? But it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be above ground in the other guy's field. So by the same token, maybe not necessarily, maybe even in his field itself, once it was picked up, maybe, and it landed on top of something else, maybe it's not shikha anymore. Or maybe, but maybe not. Maybe it's still considered in the field. So Toshma, the Gemara says, let's try to bring another proof. A Mishnah says in Peah, if the farmer took hold of a certain bundle of grain and he intended to bring it to the city, at this point, Rashi explains, the Gemara is assuming that it doesn't davka mean that he picked it up intending to bring it to the city. Usually, when a person picks up a bundle of the grain, that's what his purpose for it is. But it would mean, l'chore, if he picked it up for any reason, the niche agave chaveroi, then he put down that bundle on top of a different bundle, v'shochloi, and then he forgot it, hatachten shikha v'ayun ein shikha, then only the bottom one would be considered shikha, but not the top one. Reb Shimon Yehuda Oimim, Mishum Reb Shimon, Shneim Enim Shikha. And Reb Shimon Yehuda disagrees and says in the name of Reb Shimon, neither one is Shikha. Hatachten Mepesho Tomun, the bottom one because it's Tomun, and he agrees with Reb Yehuda before who says that Tomun is not considered Shikha. Va'oyen Mepesho itself, and the top one wouldn't be because it's not on the ground, it's above the ground, it's on top of something else. Now, let's consider. Ad kan le pligi elabatachten. Now, the machlokas between Reb Shimon ben Yehuda and the Chachamim seems to be only as far as the bottom one. Do we say that the bottom one is potter from Shikha because it's Tomun or not? Abba ba'elion divahakalei habo'i Shikha. It sounds like the top one, everybody would agree, is not Shikha. So therefore, so we see now, so in other words, we would see that they both agree that anytime it's soft, anytime it's not lying flat on the ground, then it's not Shikha. Well, there you go. That's why it's potter from Shikha, because it's not on the ground. It's on top of a different one. The one answer is no. Shiny Hossam, no, because it's different over there. Because once he took a hold of it, it doesn't even need to be that he took hold of it to bring it to the city. Once he was Zoicha in it, then it's not, then he was Zoicha in it. In other words, the whole concept of Shikha only applies, Rashi explains, it has to be Shokhuach Me'ikroi, where to begin with he forgot it, not that he ever made a Kinyan on it and then forgot it. So here, once he picked it up, he made a Kinyan on it. So then therefore Shikha doesn't apply anymore because of that. Well, the Gemara asks, Yehochi Ma'iri Agabi Chaveri. Well, then why does the Mishnah bother mentioning the case where he put it on top of a different one? I'll feel of a sudden, Nami. Wouldn't the same thing apply based on that logic, even if you put it back down on the ground in the field? The Gemara says, Enoch Nami, you're right. The reason it mentions the case where he put it on top of a different one is because it wants to present the machloikas about what happens with the bottom one. So the Gemara says, Vahom Mipneshu Tzoch Gomer. So what do you mean, though? The Mishnah is saying that Shimon and Yehuda is saying that the top one is potter because it's Tzoch, because it's floating above the ground. The answer is, Eim Mipneshu Kitzoch. You could say it doesn't mean literally that it's above, that it's potter because it's above the ground. It's similar to, in other words, as if it was still above ground in his hand, and therefore he's still Zoicha in it. So not necessarily is the Mishnah taking a stand one way or the other on if it's not in his hand anymore, but it's on top of something else. Is it potter or not? Maybe, maybe not. In the end though, the Rambam does paskin like Rav Ohu, that in fact, if it is on top of the, as long as it's in his field, it can be considered Shikha, even if it's on top of something else. So now the Gemara is going to continue and relate this back to the matter of Egla Aruch. One day, when Abaye was feeling that his mind was particularly clear, he says, Omar Abaye, Hareini ki ben Azay b'shukei Tveria. I am now like Ben Azay in the marketplace of Tveria. Ben Azay, you know, is very, very sharp. And anytime anybody asked him anything in Kola Torah Kula, he could answer. So now Rabbi is saying that today I feel like that. I feel like I'm ready to meet any challenge in Torah that people come. So Amalei Ahumi did Abonon LaAbaya. So one of the Chachamim came and asked Abaya, Shnei Chalolim Zeh Gabi Zeh. Returning to our case of Egla Arufa, suppose you find two bodies, one on top of the other. Now one of them is a little bit, they're a little bit offset one from the other. So one of them is on top of the second one is on top of the first one, but it's a little bit turned in a different direction, let's say. So the top one is slightly closer to one city and the bottom one is slightly closer to a different city. So meheichan humoyed. From which one do we measure? Do we say there are a lot of possibilities? Do we say min b'mineh habitamun? And min b'mineh lai habitzof, would we say that because they're both the same type of thing, they're both bodies, therefore that the bottom one would be considered tamun, it would be considered hidden, and as we said in the Mishnah, you don't do an egla arufa for a hidden one, so therefore we ignore that one as far as egla arufa, ume elyon moided, and therefore we measure only from the top body, or joma min b'mineh habitzof, or maybe we would say that even the top one is considered soft because not lying on the ground, or min b'mineh lo yhabit tamun, and conversely, maybe we would say that's not considered tamun unless it's buried, like the Mishnah had said, in dirt or rocks or whatever, not if it's under another body, or we tacked and moided, therefore we should measure from the bottom one. Or do a min b'mineh habit tamun, or min b'mineh habit soft. Maybe it's considered tamun and soft, v'lo me tacked and moided, v'lo me elyon moided, and then you wouldn't measure from either one, and there would be no egla arufa at all. And for that matter, Rashi says you could ask that. For that matter, you could ask maybe one is not maybe the bottom one is not tumlin and the top one is not suf, and therefore you would have to measure from both of them, and maybe conceivably two different cities would have to bring an egla arufa. But the Gemara didn't mention that point because it's included in all the other ones so far. So what are the possibilities? So what's the din? Amalei, so Abaya answers this kacham tinisua. We can learn it from the Mishnah, from the Braisa that we quoted before. Oima, we just said, Oima shehechsik by the halichah here. If you grabbed a hold of a bundle of grain intending to bring it to the city, and he put it on top of a different bundle of grain, and then he forgot it, only the bottom one is shikha because the chachamim don't hold that there's an exemption of tamun. The top one is not shikha. The top one is not shikha because it's soft, because it's above the ground. Rav Shimon Yehuda Omer, Rav Shimon Shneim Enim Shikha, and Rav Shimon Yehuda says the name of Rav Shimon, like we said before, neither one is Shikha. Atachim Mepneshu Tamun, Ve'oim Mepneshu Tzav. The bottom one is considered Tamun, and he agrees with Rav Yehuda that therefore it's Potter, and the top one is Potter because it's soft, because it's not on the ground, because not the Sadecha anymore. So Savruha now. The Chachamim from the Beis Medrash who wanted to use the, who were trying to understand, Rabbi's answer, they thought Dehani Tanoi could have Yehuda Svirulahu, that both the Tanoim in this last Braisa that we just quoted, both agree with Rabbi Yehuda, Da'ama Basada Prapla Tamun, where he says that the word Basada means not something that's Tamun, not something that's hidden. Well, if we understand it that way, so what would be the underlying reason behind their machlokas? So we would say that because here it's min b'mina, it's one bundle of grain on top of another bundle of grain, so they're both the same min. So one Tana would hold that min b'mina have a tamun. So the Tana Kama would hold that. Rav Shimon Yehuda would hold that even the bottom one is considered tamun. Omar Savalai have a tamun, whereas the Tana Kama would hold it's not tamun. So therefore he would say that this bottom one is still shikha because even though he agrees with Rav Yehuda's underlying idea that tamun is potter from shikha, here he wouldn't call it tamun because the fact is it's only buried under another bundle of the same kind that Tana Kama would say. When does Rav Yehuda say that tamun is potter? Only if you have only if it's buried underneath something else, not the same min. So if we understand it that way, then that would be the answer to, the question that was posed to Abaya. You have the two mason, one on top of the other. We would say that the Tanakama, and the halacha would be like the Tanakama of the Pashtus, would be that the bottom one is not considered Tamun. Therefore, we would have to go according to the, at least we'd have to go according to the bottom one. So the question is, no, he could have Yehuda Svirulahu, the Kula Amma, Min Mimina have a Tamun. No, not necessarily. You could say if they both agree with Rav Yehuda, they might both agree that because min b'minoi, it's still considered tamun. We don't care about the fact that it's still the same min. Nevertheless, tamun still applies. We could say more simply that the Braisa has the same as repeating the same argument of Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. So the Chachamim over here in this last Braisa agree with the Chachamim against Rabbi Yehuda that there's no exemption for Tamun anyway. But Rabbi Shimon Yehuda would hold like Rabbi Yehuda that there's an exemption for Tamun. So in that case, then, not necessarily is the Braisa taking a stand one way or the other on min b'minoi, on whether it's buried, when it's buried under the same min, whether at least according to the Chachamim, whether that's considered Tamun. Because the Chachamim would be saying that there's no exemption for Tamun anyway. Well, the question is, in that case, then why bother mentioning the case where you put one bundle on top of the other? I feel the offer with Suronami. Wouldn't the same thing, wouldn't you have the same machloikas also if the bundle was buried in dirt or in pebbles? Because after all, if we're saying that the machloikas is just whether tamun is an exemption or not, then should just say that in that case also, the Chachamim hold that it's not potter, and Rav Shimon Yehuda holds it is. The answer is Enochanami. You're right. However, the Braisa wanted to highlight how far Rabbi Yehuda goes. Drama fill of min b'minay have a tamun, where he says that even min b'minay is enough for it to be considered tamun.
So therefore, that's why the Braisa would tell about that case where it's under another bundle. But in fact, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon Yehuda would say the same thing, even if it was buried in dirt. So from that Braisa, there's not really necessarily a proof. The Rambam ends up paskining like the possibility that the Elyon murdered. We measure only from the top one. We do consider the bottom one to be Tumun, and therefore we ignore that as far as Eglah Rufa, and we measure only from the top body. Okay, turn it on bottom. We learn in a Braisa. Now this we learned in the Mishnah. Cholol v'loy chonuk. When it says cholol, when a dead body, and the word cholol specifically means somebody who was killed by a metal weapon. So therefore it means v'loy chonuk. So therefore it comes to exclude the case where the person is found strangled. Cholol also means v'loy mefarfer, where he's not still moving around. In other words, he has to be actually completely dead, not just that they found him on the verge of death. So there's some discussion what happens afterwards. If he does die, does that mean after all we do the Eglah Rufa? The Me'iri says that they would, but then the Minchas Chinuch says that not. As long as they found him still alive, then they would never bring the Eglah Rufa, even though he died afterwards. Anyway, Ba'adrama, we said below Tomun Bagal. The word Ba'adrama means not if it's buried in a heap of dirt or rocks or whatever. Noifel, when it says falling in the Pasuk, means below Toli Be'ilan, not if he's hanging on a tree. Basoda, and the word Basoda in the field means below Tzopop Ne'amayim, not if he's floating on the surface of the water. Rebbe Lozer says, I agree as far as cholol, that it has to be specifically that, but as far as the others, no, but kulanim hoya cholol orphan. In all of those cases, as long as the person was cholol, was killed by a sword or some other metal weapon, then orphan, then you would do the Eglah Rufa. In other words, he says, the fact that we're learning from Ba'adoma and Basada and so on and so forth, those, he says, are not essential. The essential thing is that it has to be a cholol. So Tanya, Omer Rav Yosi ben Bar Yehuda, Omer Loi L'Rav Elazar. So they asked Rav Elazar, how could you say that? Don't you agree that if a guy was found strangled and lying on a garbage heap, that so even though he's not soft and he's not tumun and so forth, she'in ofin, we don't do the Eglah Rufa, because after all, the guy is strangled and not killed with a weapon. So then, Alma, cholol v'lechonuk. So you agree also that cholol means specifically that and not killed in any other way. Hochanami, ba'adama v'lechonuk v'gal, nof v'lechonuk v'ilun, v'sodu v'lechonuk v'nem, agabi mayim. So why are you saying by the other ones that it's not exact, and even though he's found buried in dirt or hanging on a tree or floating on the water, nevertheless, you still would do Eglah Rufa? What's the difference? So Rav Elazar, cholol yisayruk, see, the answer is Rav Elazar would say, sure, but it says an extra time in the pasuk cholol, so that it says more times, it says several times, so from one of those, we can learn that it excludes cholol, that excludes chonuk. So in other words, he's saying, because it repeats the word cholol, therefore we learn that one is particular, it has to be cholol, but all the other ones, it only says once ba'adama, once basada, once noifel, so therefore he says that means it's not essential, and it doesn't have to be that way. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is like the Tana in our Mishnah, that in those cases there's no Eglah Rufa. Rosham Shinofal Hirsch gives the point that in those cases at least you see that the person had a certain fear. He's trying to cover up what he did. Or in the case where the person was found in the farfar, obviously he just ran away before he had the chance to finish the job. So it shows at least he has a certain fear of the authorities. And therefore, when do you do Eglah Rufa? Only when the guy is like blazing it out. Like, I'm going to leave a dead body over here and you guys can't do anything about it. So therefore, that was so in all those cases, Tomun and Toli Be'ilan and so forth, and that would be different. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, Nimsa Samoch L'Sfar, if you find the body near the border of Eretz Yisrael, Ola Ir Sheruba Ovid L'Chavim Follow, where you find it near a city that's majority Goyim, then you don't do Eglah Rufa. Dichtib Ki Yimotze, Krach L'Motze, because the passage says Ki Yimotze, if you find, implying not Motsui, not something where it's more common for this kind of thing to happen, and near the border of the Goyish nations, or near a city with Goyim in it, then it's more likely that one of them killed him, and it's more Motsui, it's more common for there to be bodies found over there, and therefore there's no Eglah Rufa. We said, Oyla Irsha Einba Beis Din, if you find the body near a city where there's no Beis Din, then we said you don't measure. Deba'inan, Zikne Ir, Haleka, because you have to have Zikne Ha'ir, and you don't have, so therefore you're not going to be able to do it. So therefore you ignore that sin. And we said, Ein Moedin Evel Yerchola. You measure only to a city that has a Beis Din. So the Gemara says, Pshita, isn't that last part obvious? Kivin the tunnel Eir Sha'imba Beis Din. Once it says that you measure, once it says that you that if a city, that the nearby city does not have a Beis Din, then you don't measure to it. I know your dinah dein moedin in el yoshiyashvah. Then the nearby city that doesn't have a Beis Din, it says doesn't bring an egla arufa. So automatically, then we know I know your dinah dein moedin in el yoshiyashvah Beis Din, that you measure only to the city that has the Beis Din. So what's the point of mentioning that last line? The answer is the answer is exactly that. Hokamash Milan. That's exactly what the Mishnah wants to tell us. The reason behind it. To the Tanya, not the reason, but in other words, you would have misunderstood the Mishnah to be saying that if the nearest city doesn't have a Beis Din, then there's no Eglah Arufa at all. But in fact, the Mishnah wants to tell us, it doesn't mean there's no Eglah Arufa, it just means that city that doesn't have a Beis Din doesn't bring the Eglah Arufa. To the Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa. Minayin Shein Nimsa Somoch L'Ir Shein B'Beis Din. How do we know that if you find the body near a city that doesn't have a Beis Din, Shemanichin Oysa, we ignore that city, Umoydin L'Ir Sheyesh B'Beis Din, and we measure only to the nearest city that has a Beis Din. Tamad Lema is V'Lok V'Ziknei Irahi Mikol Mokim. Therefore, the Pasuk says the Zkenim of that city should take, and that means regardless, even if it's not actually the closest city, but it's the closest city that has a Beis Din. Rashi explains, in other words, that because it didn't have to say the word ha'ir, it could have said the Zakenim of that city should take the cast. So therefore, we learn from that it means ha'ir. The extra word ha'ir means even if it's not the closest city, but if the closest city that has a Beis Din, then they're the ones who do it. Mishnah says, Nimtzim Mechuvan Ben Shtei Ayaris. What happens if you find the body exactly between two cities? Then Shtei Mevias, Shtei Eglos, Divir Rebel Yezer. Rebel Yezer says that in that case, each city has to bring its own Egla Arufa. Now, actually, there's Gemara in Bechuris that mentions that you only have Rebel Yezer's opinion. The Gemara in Bechuris brings a couple of braises with different Chachamim who argue with Rebel Yezer. One opinion says that in that case there is no Egla Arufa, and the other one says that the two cities jointly bring an Egla Arufa, and they make a Tznai, whichever of these cities is actually the closer one, then Egla Arufa should be that city. We're going to see in the Gemara, because you have the question of these measurements, when you come out with the exact same measurement in either direction, can we say that in fact it really is exact? So we'll deal with that in the Gemara. Continues the mission of En Yerushalayim Mevia Egla Arufa. The city of Yerushalayim does not bring an Eglah Arufa, even if you found a body near it, for reasons that we're going to see in the Gemara. Next, Nimtza Rosh B'Makom Echad V'Gufa B'Makom Acher. If you find the head of the body in, if you find the head of the dead person in one place and the body in a different place, then Rabbi Eliezer says you bring the head to the body. Rabbi Akiva says you bring the body to where the head is. We'll see in the Gemara what the purpose of that is. Next, me'ayin hoyu moedidin. From what part of the body did they measure? Rabbi Eliezer says they would measure from his navel. Rabbi Akiva says from his nose. And Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, and Mokim Shinasa Cholom, it's Avarit. Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says, look, since we said before that he has to be a Cholo, he has to be a person who was killed by the sword, where does a person become a Cholo when he's killed by a sword? When his head is chopped off. So therefore you measure from his neck, Mitzavarit. As we'll see in the Gemara, that he learns from a pasuk that the word Cholo specifically refers to somebody who was killed by a blow to the neck. So the Gemara says, my time is the Rebbe Eliezer. Why does Rebbe Eliezer hold that each city brings its own Egla Arufa in this case, where it's exactly in the middle? Because Rebbe Eliezer holds, first of all, it is possible to be precise. In other words, when we have, they measured and they found in each direction, it's exactly the same measurement, we don't say, well, it means that their measuring instruments are not 100% accurate and really one of them is actually slightly closer and we just don't know it. No, we could actually say that is a real valid measurement. It really did come out that it is exact to the millimeter in both directions. So therefore, and he holds a kroiva after the kroivos. He says also when the pasuk says the nearest city doesn't mean only the single nearest city, can even be the two nearest cities. Therefore, he says that both of them would have to bring an egla arufa. the different opinions in the Braises, in the Sefer Bechoras, disagree on one or the other of those points. If we say, and the Gemara brings this concept in a number of other places in Shas, if you say e epshel atzamtzim, if you say it's impossible to be precise with the measurements, really, in other words, one measurement really must have been slightly longer than the other, we just, our measuring instruments are not accurate enough to be able to tell, then we would say the fact is both of them are not close to the city, only one of them is. So then, therefore, we would say that. Only one of them needs to bring an Egel Arufa, and in that case, then they would bring one jointly. They'd pool their money jointly and bring an Egel Arufa and make a Tanai. The people of each city would say, if we're the closer city, then it should belong to us, and if not, then it should belong to you. Or if we say that Das Kroiva, not Kroivois, then we would say that you only ever, the closest city brings, not the closest cities in plural, and then that opinion would say there's no Egel Arufa in this case. But Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with both of those points, which is why he says there's two Egel Arufas. Next, we said, V'en Yerushalayim via Egel Arufa, the city of Yerushalayim never brings one, D'amar Kro L'Rishka, because the Pasuk says, that if you find the body in the land that Hashem gave you to inherit, because Sabar, so the Tana of our Mishnah holds Yerushalayim, when it's Chalkul Shvatim, the city of Yerushalayim was not divided up to, among the Shvatim, it's the joint property of the entire Jewish people, therefore it's not called Lerishla. Then we said in the Mishnah, Nimsa Rosh of a Makom Chula, we said if the head was found in one place and the body in a different place, then we have Machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Akiva, which one you bring to which one. So Bamaya Kamisli. So what are they arguing regarding what? What's the Nafkamina, which part we bring to which one? Are you going to say that they're arguing as far as measurement? So in other words, here you have further on in the Mishnah, they're arguing whether you measure from the navel or the nose or whatever. So therefore, it's important to know where the body actually fell to begin with, to measure from there. Nope. Since the sefer begins that almost as a new machloikas, from where do you measure? That implies that the first machloikas in the Mishnah is not talking about as far as the measuring. There's something else. So Amar Yitzchak, the mes mitzvah konim akoyim akamithim. The machloikas in the earlier part of the Mishnah is, as far as we know, there's the din mes mitzvah konim akoyim. If you find a mes mitzvah, you have a mes where you don't have anybody available, any of his relatives to bury him, then the din is konim akoyim. He acquires the place where he fell and you bury him right there. There are dinim in that. It depends whether it's in Jewish territory and there's different dinim in it. But basically, you have that idea that you bury him where he's found. So the Mishnah is saying, look, Koivrei, forget about Egel Arufa for a minute. You have to bury the guy. So Koner Makoyma. So the Mishnah is telling us, first of all, that by implication that he's Koner where he fell, and therefore you have to bury him there. The Mishnah is not explicitly saying that, Dean, because we know that from other places in Chas. So Vahecha, the Nimsa, Rosh, the Makamacher, the Guf of Makamacher. So now, if you find the head in one place and the body in another place, Melichon, Rosh, Eitzel, Guf, Devi, Rebbe Lezer, Rebbe Kiva, and Guf, Eitzel, Rosh. So then you have the Machlokas, Rebbe Lezer, and Rebbe Yeshua, which part you bring to which part. But it's not relevant as far as measuring for the Egel Arufa, it's relevant as far as where you bury the guy. Well, the Maikum Mithagi, well, what's the underlying Machlokas? Rabbi Eliezer, who says that you bring the head to the body, he holds the body must have fallen right where the guy died. Reisha, the not even nothil. How did the head come out to be someplace else? The head rolled out, afterward, the head rolled away. So therefore, the makoima of the smetz mitzvah is where you find the body. Or Marisaber, whereas Rabbi Akiva holds Reisha heik the nothil. On the contrary, the head fell where the guy was actually killed. Gufo who deroyed Bazel, but the body still continued to move because let's say we assume the guy was killed while he was walking. Let's say so. Therefore, so the body ended up moving a little bit, ended up moving a little further along, like convulsing and whatever, and moving a little further along. So therefore, he says that basically where you find the head is where the guy actually died. There is a Yerushalmi that says that actually if it's on a down slope, then even Rabbi Akiva would agree that probably the head, the body is where it landed, and then you find the head further down the slope, let's say, then yeah, you would say that you would say that you have to bring the body to where you have to bring the head to where the body is. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Me'ayin Hoyimoydidin, from what part of the body did they measure to find the nearest city? And we have three different opinions. So, B'mayikum Mithili, so what's the underlying argument? Mar Saba Ikach Yosef Ape, Rabbi Akiva, who holds that you measure from his nose, holds that the main chayus of a person is in his nose when he's breathing. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer holds that the main chayus of a person is from his navel. A person eats and drinks, and that sustains his body. So that's considered the main place of his chayus. So the Gemara says, Lema kihani tanoi. Should we say then that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are arguing in the same machlokas as the following tanoim? Meheichan avlad noitzer. From what part of a baby's body does it start being formed in the womb? Meiroshay. First the head is formed, and then the rest of the body. V'cheinu oimer. As we find the pasuk, mimeini after goizi. We find David HaMelech says to Hashem, from the womb of my mother, you are goizi. Now, in context, the Mephoshim on the pasuk explained that goizi means literally you pulled me out. But the Gemara is doubting over here, the word goizi means my head. As we find the pasuk, cut off your hair and then throw it away, in other words, as a sign of mourning. So we see that the word goz is associated with the head. So therefore, mime'e'ini'ata goizi would mean that David is saying to Hashem, you created my head and then the rest of me in my mother's womb. So therefore, so that would show that that first the head forms. Abashol Imam Tiburai, and Abashol says the baby is first formed from its navel, or Mashalayah Shosha Elach Elach, and then it sends out roots in all directions, and the rest of the body is formed from that. So therefore we would say Rabbi Eliezer, who holds that you measure from the navel, would hold like Abashol, and Rabbi Akiva, who holds that you measure from the nose, would go like the Tanakh. But the Gemara says, no, after the Tema Abashol, no, you could even say that Rabbi Akiva agrees with Abashol, Adkana, Ka'ama Abashol, Alain Yetzirah. Because Abashol is talking about only as far as the formation of the baby, the Ki Mitzvah Vlad, the Mitzvah Mitzvah, that the baby is formed beginning from the middle, says Abashol. Aval in Chayusa, but when it comes to the life of a person, everybody would agree, even Abashol, that the primary life of a person is in his nose, in his breathing. As we find by the marble, every creature that had the breath of life in its nostrils died. So we see that the main thing is the breath of life in the nostrils. And this is Negeah in other areas of Halacha as well. You have in Yuma, talks about a case where a building collapsed and digging out survivors from the rubble on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur. If you find a person and they're not breathing, then you don't continue unburying them on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur or whatever, because at that point they're dead. But if you find that they're still breathing, then you still are mechal Shabbos or whatever to save them. So we see that the breathing is the main thing. Okay, the last thing in the Mishnah we said, Rabbi Lezman and Yaakov, I'm Makam Shanasa Cholom Mitzavodai, that we measure from the place where the person becomes a Cholom, namely from his Nech, my time of the Rabbi Lezman and Yaakov. Why does Rabbi Lezman and Yaakov say that? Kedichtiv loses oisachal tzavre chalalei reshoyim, it's a nevuah of Yechezkel against the country of Ammon. He said that you're going to be placed together with the necks of the corpses of the reshoyim. So we see that the word cholol, corpse, is associated with neck. Therefore, Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says that there we have a point that therefore a person is called cholol when a person is now we're fine. He'll agree that even if the person was killed by a metal weapon, even if it wasn't specifically at the neck, you still do the eglah rufa. But at least the word cholol is most associated with the neck, and therefore he says that that's where you would measure from. Okay.
Yes, Shekhayah.